Good evening. Glad to see everybody that's out tonight. I'm supposed to be talking about Zephaniah. Got to the point of Zephaniah. This is kind of a crucial point in the chapter. I flat out just did not have time to do it. So instead, we're going to take a little bit different approach. Every once in a while, I'll get these strange little texts from Nathan Batten. And he'll say, hey, you need to check out this book. And so usually when if Nathan says check it out, then it's usually pretty interesting. So that's what I've done. He got me on a book. It's called Reading Moses, Seeing Jesus. It's really interesting. It's pretty deep. And so I'm just going to talk about one thing that it really does. It kind of changes the way you look at the Scriptures. I think the Scripture, there's so much more to it than what we don't understand. That we just kind of glance across the top of it. We read it, but we're really not picking up everything that is meant. The Bible is anyone who thinks the Bible is just a made-up story, I mean, it's crazy. They're missing how intricate the layers are that are built upon each level. So this little lesson is entitled Deeds of the Father, and we're going to talk about Abram's Exodus. We're going to intertwine two stories. This is not a very long lesson. It's going to come back from the book of Genesis. But this is just was in the introduction of Nathan's latest book that he's reading. But it's very interesting. I don't know what I'd ever thought of it. So as a text, Genesis the 12th chapter, verse 10, it's talking about when Abram was leaving and starting to make his exodus. Genesis 12 and 10, now there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down to Egypt to dwell there, for the famine was severe in the land. And so this is going to be the story of how Abram and his wife Sarah, they go down towards Egypt. I remember the parts of the story, not so much what I'm going to talk about tonight, but I remember the part about him being worried about his wife, because Sarah was so beautiful, so he tells the wife to say, hey, just tell everybody you're my sister. And so then Pharaoh gets mad at him because, well, you know, you told me that was your sister, but it was really your wife. That's a part of the story I remember, but we're going to note a couple other things. This is really going to be hopefully an impressive sermon. Again, the book is called Reading Moses, Seeing Jesus, Apostle Bar and Sorf. It's a real interesting little read. And so I'm going to kind of give you just a little glimpse of it tonight. And it makes you think differently about the Scriptures. It makes me think differently when Casey was reading tonight from Ezekiel, which in all honesty, is really kind of sounds boring at times. About how far this was, and he measured this, and his water was at the ankles, and he measured this part, and he went to the east, and then he drew a line, and it seems very insignificant, and it makes you question that maybe there's more to it than what we're reading. Even in the book of Ezekiel, there's just more to it, and we just have to learn to look deeper, and really learn to meditate in the Scriptures. So we're going to talk about the deeds of the Father. We're going to look at Abram's Exodus, and kind of compare some things, and hopefully it'll be an interesting little study. Before we go further, let's go to God and the Word. I have to say thank you to Drew for having to use his phone. We're so technologically advanced. I have it all on my phone, which is back in Wall, so that doesn't do me a lot of good. But then we were smart enough that I emailed it off of Megan's phone, so she still had it on her phone, so she emailed it to Drew. World is changing, Mike. It's changing. Technology is just going crazy. So here we go. We're going to have a comparison of Abram's Exodus and the Exodus of Israel. So I never noticed this before. So I want you to notice the words, the terminology, the imagery that is used. So Abram, Genesis 12 and 10 says, now there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down to Egypt to dwell there, for the famine was severe in the land. So Abram is leaving his land because there's a great famine. Does that sound familiar when we think about the Exodus? So the split side here is going to be from the Exodus account. Okay, so we're going to be in Genesis 12. This brown side over here is going to be from Israel's Exodus. Notice the words. Now the famine was severe in the land. Well, maybe that's just a coincidence. I mean, famines come and go, right? That's not that big of a coincidence. But when Abram was leaving, there was a famine, great famine. He had to leave his land. And so now Jacob's family is going to have to leave because of a great famine. So where do they go? Well, they descended down to Egypt. Genesis 12 and 10, and Abram went down to Egypt to dwell there. That sound familiar? Genesis 46 and 6. So they took their livestock and their goods, which they had acquired in the land of Canaan, and went to Egypt, Jacob and all his descendants with them. So remember the story of how, you know, Joseph, the youngest son, goes to actually kind of serendipitously rises to great power and authority in the nation of Egypt, and his brethren come to Egypt looking for food, and we go through the whole thing of, you know, hiding the silver cup in the bag, and then going back and getting Benjamin, and that whole story that we find in Genesis. Well, that account kind of culminates with all of Jacob's relatives. The whole family is moving down into Egypt. Just like Abram did. So when Abram left the land of Ur, he went to Egypt as well. Here's something interesting. Now we're starting to get pretty specific. That there was a situation where the males and the females were going to be treated rather differently. That the females were going to have, there's going to be a kind of a life and death situation just on one of the sexes. Genesis 12 and 12, therefore it will happen when the Egyptians see you, that they will say, this is his wife, and they will kill me, but they will let you live. Okay, so remember the story? Abram's going, he has Sarah, his wife, with him, and Sarah must be a knockout. She's a pretty good-looking lady. And so he's trying to convince his wife, hey, tell them you're my sister, because if they find out that you're my wife, he says, they're going to kill me. So the male is going to die, but the daughter's going to be allowed to live. Okay, so the males will be killed, and the female will be allowed to survive. Well, interestingly, nearly a very similar command was given in Egypt in the time of the Exodus. Exodus 1 and 16, then the king of Egypt spoke. And he said, when you do the duties of a midwife for Hebrew women and see them on the birthstools, if it is a son, then you shall kill him. But if it is a daughter, then she shall live. So, again, it was based on the gender, it was based on the sex, that if it was a male child, it had to die. And if it was a female child, the female child was allowed to live. So again, that's eerily coincidental, is it not? So now we're up to three coincidences in this story. And we start realizing that the exodus of Abram is kind of foreshadowing the exodus of Israel. So let's keep going. Genesis 12 and 15. So the princes of Pharaoh also saw her and commended her to Pharaoh. And the woman was taken to Pharaoh's house. So this is talking about Sarah. It's talking about his wife. That the Egyptians kind of took her and held her in the Egyptian's house. So she was held in captivity by the Egyptians. Well, guess what happened in Exodus 1 and 1? Therefore they set taskmasters over them to afflict them with their burdens. And they built for Pharaoh supply cities, Pithom and Ramses. So, same fashion, the nation of Israel, you know, all of these descendants of Jacob, they were also placed in captivity under Pharaoh and were not allowed to leave. You might be thinking, well, that's a little bit of a stretch. The next one is very specific. Plagues in Egypt. Do you realize during the time of Abram that there had Egyptian plagues? Genesis 12 and 17, but the Lord plagued Pharaoh in his house with great plagues because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. So God punished the Egyptians for having Sarah in captivity. Well, that's too easy to see, right? Exodus 11 and 1, it was the children of Israel, the nation of Israel was under captivity, and they kept looking for a savior. They finally found Moses. He was going to be the great deliverer, but old Pharaoh stood up. And he would not, kept saying his heart was hardened. He would not let the people go. And so what did God do? He punished them with plagues, just like he'd done in the time of Abram. Exodus 11 and 1 finally gets to the end. After 9 plagues were unsuccessful, and the Lord said to Moses, I will bring one more plague on Pharaoh and on Egypt. So it was 10 plagues that were sent against Egypt. So again, you see there's a symbolism here. It's like we're following the same script with Abram's exodus and the exodus of the nation. But what happened after the plagues? Well, Abram got kicked out of Egypt. He was expelled from Egypt. Genesis 12 and 20, so Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, speaking of Moses, or rather speaking of Abram, and they sent him away, and his wife, and all that he had. So once the plagues happened, once they finally had enough of the plagues, Abram was kicked out with everything that he had. Exodus 12 and 33, what happened after the final plague, after the Passover? And the Egyptians urged the people that they might send them out of the land in haste, for they said, we shall all be dead. So we want these Israelites gone. Get them out of here because of all the plagues. And how did they leave Egypt? Did they leave empty-handed? Abram didn't. Abram came into Egypt without anything, but how did he leave? Genesis 13 and 2, Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold. But where did Abram get this livestock, this silver, and this gold? Well, he got it in Egypt. Fast forward a couple hundred years, what happened when the nation of Israel left Egypt? Exodus 12 and 35, now the children of Israel had done according to the word of Moses, and they had asked from the Egyptians articles of silver, articles of gold, and clothing. So when the Israelites left Egypt, they left rich. The Egyptians were giving them silver and gold and clothing so that when they left, just to get them to go, they took some spoil with them when they went. So, to me, when I was reading that is just very fascinating. I never picked up on a lot of those landmarks, those guiding points that are being hit by both stories. And apparently, there's a purpose to this. Well, there's got to be a purpose, right? That's just too many coincidental things. As we read the Old Testament accounts, it just makes too much sense that one is foreshadowing the others. I just didn't have a name for it. Now I do. I don't know how to say that in Hebrew, but it translates as, the deeds of the Father are a sign to the sons. And so that's kind of a study tool that these old Hebrew scholars have figured out, and they've touched on in the past, that the deeds of the Father are a sign to the Son. And you start thinking, well, maybe there's more to these stories than what necessarily meets the eye. So I want you to notice how the description of Israel's Exodus repeats key words, key phrases, and key themes that were found in the account of Abram's Exodus. Is that coincidental? Are we reading too much into the scriptures? And I really don't think we are. I think it's possible to. But I think when we step back and look at this in a broader sense, we start seeing there's some overlap. There's some meaning here that this story, the story of Abram's Exodus, was foreshadowing the Exodus of Egypt. Nathan talked about the flood and the way that the flood foreshadowed things in Israel's history. He talked about Adam during his sermon, during his meeting here, about how Adam foreshadowed things that would occur later on. This was in the book. Let me give you another example. I want you to think about Adam and Eve. Go all the way back to the garden. If you look at it in kind of this broad terms, Adam and Eve were given land. They were given land. They were given some commands to follow in order to stay in the land. They were tricked and subdued by a serpent who was indigenous to that land. And they fell foil to that serpent's temptation. They were kicked out of the land. They had to exit to the east. And by the time we get to Genesis chapter 11, where were the descendants of Adam and Eve living? They found themselves at a place called Babel. I want you to think about it now. Does that not foreshadow the entire nation of Israel's problems? The nation of Israel was given a land. They were given the promised land. They were given some commands to follow and to be in order to stay in the land. Instead, they got tripped up by some temptations of the people that live in the land, namely the Amalekites. They got caught up in their gods and in their worship. They were kicked out of the land. And where did the descendants of the nation of Israel end up for 70 years? Babylon. Is that too coincidental? Is it just how one story is foreshadowing another? That's what these people have picked up, these Jewish scholars. And they call the deeds of the Father are a sign to the Son. And as you start looking at things in broad context, you start thinking, there may be something to that. It's something on a pretty deep level. So that's what I sent Nathan back. I said, this is deep. I said, I'm having to reread every chapter about 5 times to try to figure out what it's saying. But there's definitely, I think, something to that. And the way these stories are layered in the Bible, there's something to it. Let me give you another example. In the book of Hosea, this minor prophet, Hosea 6 and 7, he says, but like Adam, they have violated the covenant. There they have dealt treacherously with me. That's from the New American Standard. So Hosea is comparing, like Adam violating the covenant in the garden was foreshadowing the way the nation of Israel violated the covenant in the promised land. And so that's a very deep thought when you look at it, that these two events, it's just easy to kind of pick up and read the story of the Garden of Eden. Oh, that's a neat story. There was a snake that talked and missed the bigger picture, that was actually foreshadowing what was going to happen to the nation of Israel. That's a very powerful, powerful thought. The disobedience of Adam foreshadowed the disobedience of Israel. And so, as I get more into this book and try to get a little more understanding, I'll try to bring forth some more things. One of the most fascinating ones, that the law at Sinai brought punishment. So things that were done before they received the law, the children wouldn't be punished. They would do the same thing after they received the law. 10,000 of them God would kill. And I never noticed it. There's about 8 instances on one side of Sinai compared to receiving the law after Sinai. God dealt with the people in completely different ways because the law brought wrath and judgment. Very, very interesting study. But for tonight, in conclusion, let me just kind of leave it like this. There is so much more to the scriptures than what we realize. And I believe there's lessons that are embedded within the biblical accounts, but we have to learn to look deeply. Now, we have to be careful. We don't want to read things into the account that aren't there. But when we start seeing 5, 6, 7 things of these points that line up, there's got to be something to that. And so I think it's okay that we can expand and build some concepts upon it when we see how one event seems to foreshadow the other event. I'm going to leave you with one more verse. I think the Apostle Paul understood this. I think Paul got it. Because he was the member of the Hebrew of the Hebrews. He understood the scriptures. Here's what the Apostle Paul said in Romans chapter 10 and verse 4. I'm going to read it to you from 2 different translations. First is the New American Standard. It says, it's not going to call it up for you. You will have to listen carefully. For Christ is the end of the law for righteousness to everyone who believes. He says, for Christ is the end of the law. And that word end has a little footnote, and it says goal. For Christ is the goal of the law for righteousness to everyone who believes. What was the purpose of the old law? Was the purpose of the old law to bring salvation to the nation of Israel? No. What was the purpose, the goal of the old law? Was to bring forth the Messiah. Was to bring forth Christ. Let me read it to you from it's called the Complete Jewish Bible. It says, for the goal at which the Torah aims is the Messiah, who offers righteousness to everyone who trusts. For the goal of which the Torah aims is the Messiah, who offers righteousness to everyone who trusts. So these first 5 books of the Bible, what were known in Jewish terminology as the Torah, it says the goal of the Torah is the Messiah. How many verses do you think there are in the Torah in the first 5 verses that talk about the Messiah? How many verses would you think in the first 5 books of the Bible implicitly discuss the Messiah? 100? 1,000? 20? 10? It's a whole lot closer to 10. Less than 1% of the Torah makes any mention of the Messiah. So how can you take 1% of something and say that's the goal? It's because it's embedded in it. It's embedded in the stories that there's going to be a Messiah. And these stories are much, much deeper than what we give them credit for. And then we can pick up on the prophets, and the prophets were starting to pick up on it. And then we get to the writings of the New Testament, and we see how the New Testament were pulling stuff from all over the place, and we wonder, how in the world did they do that? How could they pull from a psalm and pull from the Jeremiah and Isaiah and relate it all to the Messiah, to relate it to Jesus? Well, it's because they understood the complexity and the depth of the Scriptures. And they realized how these stories were embedded one upon another. So it's a fascinating little study. So remember that. The goal of the Torah, the goal of the old law of Moses, was not to bring the nation of Israel to salvation. That's not what it was for. Its goal was to bring Christ, to bring the Messiah to the forefront. So, hopefully a little interesting little story. The deeds of the Father. So remember that little line, the deeds of the Father are a sign to the sons. I think that's a pretty good way of saying it. There's our thought for this evening. Never like to close, I'd have a song of invitation. If we can help you in any way, we stand ready to assist you.